This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Bob Mata is with us today as we continue to break down our conversation about Lindsay Clancy and where this is going to go with a jury, depending on guilty or not guilty by reason of insanity or manslaughter. There's many places where this can land. You were in that courtroom for quite some time these last few weeks. We saw Lindsay Clancy on our screens. We saw many times where they shut down court because she was getting very emotional and upset, and I think understandably so, if we're looking at it from an empathetic window, to be confronted with these horrific images of what you caused while you were in your state of alleged psychosis. What was she like in that courtroom? We talk about defendants in courtrooms all the time, from Lori Vallow to Corey Richens to Donna Adelson. All of them have their interesting affects and how the jury is receiving them. Bob, how would you say the jury was receiving Lindsay Clancy in that room?
It's so hard to read them, you know? Yeah. And there was, you know, I talked about the one juror that many of my friends in the media are of the mindset was dead set on convicting Lindsay, that she was very pro prosecution in the case. And, you know, but she was oddly the one who, when Lindsay had the two breakdowns the day that they were going through the second and third autopsies of the kids, and they had to stop court a couple times, and she was the only witness who was just without flinching, looking at Lindsay the entire time. Like, many of the jurors would kind of glance over and then break it off. She was watching her. She had a tissue and she dabbed her eyes a couple times. And you don't know what she's feeling. Is she thinking about the kids? Is she feeling sympathy for Lindsay? You know, there's many things that could be going through her mind. And it's like, you know, everybody who wants to play like they can get a read on what somebody's thinking are full of shit. Yeah. You know, I've been trying to do it for 20 years, 20 plus years at trial, and I never got it right. You know, it's like the people that'll, you know, kill them with kindness. The guy that was always smiling at me when I was, you know, arguing or making a point when a cross examination, I was like, oh, you know, I'd go back to the table. I'm like, I think that one juror likes me. He yeah. smiles at me sometimes. You know, and then that would be the guy who was leading the charge for conviction
sure.
at the end of the day. So you can't really get a sense of it. And you know, and I didn't have to be able to read the jurors' faces to know how this thing was going to go. I've been saying it since the first time we did a live on this. I am of the mindset that I don't care how many times they try this case. Because of the state of our country, because of the massive divide on people and how they view murder, and in particular a mother murdering her own children or killing her own children, they are never going to be moved off the sentiment that she needs to be punished to the fullest sure. extent of the law, whether in a state that had the death penalty, which Massachusetts does not, that they think that she should be put to death. In a state where it's life in prison, that's where she should be. And you're never changing their mind on that.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the folks that are like myself and you too, where we believe that something went terribly wrong here, that there's no other explanation but for the fact that she was in a psychotic state when this happened. And for me, I cannot hold somebody criminally responsible if their body is basically a puppet to a diseased mind. And it's just a place I'm not willing to go, because I have a deep understanding of mental illness. I have a deep understanding of the fact that if something is being done and it's not at your own volition, meaning that you're not the one controlling it, which is so hard for some people to buy into. People are like, that makes no sense. Like, yeah. A person that's lived 70 years of their life and never had anything even remotely like that. There's never been one minute of my life where I didn't have control of my own senses and my own mind, you know? And they're like, for them, it's impossible for them to get to the point where I can't imagine that being a real thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like some movie bullshit.
They're also the same folks who aren't able to see anything from anyone else's perspective ever.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, they're the, right. They're the folks that you can't have an intelligent conversation with, which is,
on the hypothetical with the one juror that you said was so deadlocked on of guilt, and whether it's her or someone else, this is generally the way that, you know, I've seen this throughout as well. When someone starts out with a locked-in negative confirmation bias, in other words, they're not doing their job as a juror to take in all the data and remain open-minded according to the law and the instructions that are given. When they're looking, these are the ones that when you're trying to figure out what they're doing because they're just staring intently. I'm not saying this case, but typically what they're doing is they're trying to have their own confirmation biases from what they're observing. See, look, I saw this. I knew they were lying because— we all know people that are following this case that no matter what you say, no matter what argument you put up, no matter what observations and doctors saying there, she's not being deceptive, without a flinching, they think everything coming out of her mouth is complete lie, complete fabrication, and they think the emotions that they're watching and witnessing is completely fraud. And so they're having a very passive, negative, or just neutral affect to it because they don't believe what they're seeing. And the last point I want to make is this is just so profoundly dumbfounding to me that, like you said, Bob, you have those people that are on that side, and the three of us are seeing the mental health issue here. And in this context, it's a discussion, the jury's debating it. It still blows my mind that if we were doing the same thing in Kansas, this wouldn't even be a discussion. Our point of view wouldn't even matter. It wouldn't even come up on the jury. She'd be guilty. Yeah. That's what is just so mind-boggling to me, that our country is not even unified in the code of justice.
Well, I like it.
Or facts.
The facts of the matter. Well, but it's worse than that, because the reality is that there's statutes in place.
Yeah.
You have this law, this statute that allows for a defendant to come into a court of law that has been written by the legislature in every state aside from Idaho, which they have like a carve out. They have a carve out where you can attack the mens rea and the intent portion of a statute, saying like they could not form the requisite intent to have committed the crime. But, you know, and people just are incapable or unwilling to apply the law that the lawmakers have seen fit to draft. And like we call it the defense of last resort for a reason, because of exactly what we're talking about. This isn't a new concept. This is forever been the case. And it always boils down to, do people believe it, to two things, really. Do people believe that mental illness exists in the sense that it truly does, meaning that someone can and do lose control of their mind? And the other part of it is the morality argument, in terms of if you murder someone, and murder, just so you all understand, these are homicides. Murder is a legal construct, okay? Murder is a legal term that we use. You can have homicides that are justified, such as, you know, if it's self-defense, defense of others, you know, if cops have to put somebody down, it's a good shooting. Those are justifiable homicides. So finding murder is where you have malice aforethought. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's where you're going in with the intent to kill somebody purposefully. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a different thing. Manslaughter is a different charge. But, you know, kind of the way that I always try to like break through with people, I'm like, let's talk about war. Let's talk about the men and women that protect us, that enlist for various reasons, many because they have no other option, but they enlist in the military and they're sent off to a war, which we may not even know why they're being sent off for that war, but they have been trained to kill, right? They go and kill at will. Like, you know, that is their job. Your job is to go and kill the enemy. And this is going to the morality side of it. I want people to try to think like what is the difference if people are our soldiers or any soldiers anywhere are being sent off to be a part of an unjust war, or think about Muslims who flew into the World Trade Center and their people were like, well, this is righteous. You know, what you're doing is righteous. in their estimation. And they come over and they kill 3,000 Americans because they flew planes into a building. We're looking at that as murder, right? They're looking at that as justifiable in their estimation. My point being is that when one human being kills another person, the way that we're determining whether or not it's criminal is strictly a human construct.
Yeah, it's based on our perspective and our prism of where we are sitting. And that's very much how that plays. I want to ask you this, because this has been brought up quite a bit in this case. People are criticizing the police investigation into these deaths. I've been seeing it quite a bit on the conspiracy threads where people are still going down the road of Patrick and all that. Is this a case where there, and I don't know the answer to this, should there have been more investigation police work-wise to simply answer some of the questions that people have that they say, well, there are no answers to this because this X wasn't investigated. I've seen that attached to various elements of this case. But there are some cases where it is just so clean cut, there's not much more to investigate. But how do you know unless you do? Bob, what's your thoughts on people who are criticizing that?
I think the criticism of the investigation is fair.
Okay.
You know, but we're talking about two separate things. Do I think that the people that are accusing Patrick Clancy of doing this are ridiculous? Yes.
Yeah.
I do. But that's a different thing.
But this is where it's like you always just want to make sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted to shut down the bullshit.
Exactly.
And had there been a good investigation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Had there been a thorough investigation, the people that are saying, well, you know, we're just taking Patrick's word on this because they didn't investigate shit, that gives them a fuel.
Yeah.
By way of them not doing what they should have done, which was
why
just
didn't
do
they?
I think they would have said it anyway.
You know what? it's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
You know, in any case, you kind of saw it with Ellen Greenberg, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not unique to this case. There's plenty of cases where it's like, why didn't they investigate further? Right. And there really isn't always a great explanation other than incompetence.
I mean, that's the bottom line. It's indifference or incompetence, laziness. I don't know what it is. It's a combination.
I'm going to give it some grace. I think it's a shock too. I mean, so when you roll up on a scene like this in a place where you least expect it, and then it's obvious again, because again, I'm just talking human nature. Is I'm trying to place myself in that situation. So you roll up on it, you see the horror of it. You can quickly assess visually what happened, and then. And whenever she became literate, you know, with her words, some are saying on, I know that's the big debate, although it's very clearly she wasn't speaking on scene, but where she immediately pretty soon after says, I did it. As an investigator, you're going to focus your resources and attention on a different aspect of the case rather than collecting evidence because she said she did it. Again, I'm just talking from small town, you know, collectors, investigators, you know, it could have been better, but when have we ever had a case where they shouldn't have done or could have done a better job investigating?
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, you're 100%. And like you said, Robin, I mean, the bottom line is that law enforcement are all human beings.
Yeah.
You know, which brings a bigger question up to mind, which is, you know, are these investigating officers or whether they're first responders, first on the scene, you know, are they offered and do they accept the counseling that they probably need?
No.
Because if you think that you walk into a scene like that as a human being, I don't give a shit. If you have a badge on your chest, you are seeing shit that will scar you for the rest of your life. And, you know, are these folks getting the help that they need after the fact or while it's happening? You know, I mean, like that's and again, you're going to have the macho guys are like, oh, fuck it. I'm fine, man. I'm going to rub some dirt on it. You know what I mean? Those are the guys that kind of think that the mental health world is bullshit, you know, that psychs are all fucking, you know,
and
like
even
shrinks
so
and bullshit, you know, all that stuff.
Being right there for 9/11, watching 8 people jump from the North Tower, being 5 blocks away during that entire thing, side by side with NYPD during this entire thing, out of Fresh Kills Landfill, finding body parts to give back to families. And months and months after, some email coming around, if you want to talk to someone, here's a number. And then watching suicide, S's self-elimination skyrocketing in NYPD and Port Authority and FDNY around me. It was profound. And then, you know what the counseling we had was? We had a roving chaplain that was walking around Fresh Kills landfill saying, "Hey, does anyone want to talk?" And when that impacts your career, because people start giving you the label of, "Oh man, the guy's a psych job," you know, do you take it up? I don't know anyone. Now, I'll say they didn't, but I'm not aware of anyone that took up that resource, and that's watching some severe horror.
That's what I'm saying. And it's the same with our soldiers. Yeah. Who I mm-hmm. love and respect. There never goes a day when I don't see somebody that served in the military where I don't thank them for their service, because I have a deep understanding if they were in the shit, their psyche has been destroyed. Mm-hmm. They are never going to be the person that they were prior to going into combat.
Yeah.
You can't be. You can't. Something fundamentally changes in you. The things that we are grown up being told are completely unacceptable, mm-hmm. and that's taking another person's life. It doesn't matter what the context is, whether it's like you're in a war. This is what we have to do. This is what you have to do. The fact of the matter is, the thing that we've been told is verboten, that is immoral, that is against everything that we believe in terms of our laws, our religion. That it's okay in this sense, but in your mind, it's not. And you know, these, like every soldier that I know that was in the shit, and going back to, you know, I'm younger, so obviously, you know, my grandfather was WW2 age. My father didn't serve in Nam because he was already in college. But every friend that I had that has served in any of the Middle Eastern wars that we have and have come back are damaged.
Yeah,
they're damaged, and they know it, and they accept it, and they acknowledge it, and they want help, and they're feeling it every day of their life. They feel like they don't fit into society anymore. Everything looks strange and different. And you know, the care that they get is not the care that they should be getting. You know what I mean? And it's like, I just, you know, my thing with the mental health awareness thing that I'm so just adamantly advocating for is because it fucking matters. It matters.
It's the most important thing in our bodies. It controls everything we do and everything we communicate, and we treat it like it's one of the least. We treat it like it's your tonsils or so, like, not a big deal. We'll get those out. You know, like, it's your brain.
That's it.
And we have so little understanding of it, so little grace for it, and so little desire, it seems, as a society, to try and understand it better, because it's scary. And I think fear is the ultimate motivator for us not to understand it more than we do already. 100%. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to break down the Lindsey Clancy trial.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.